This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network's studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow. I am so happy today. It is going to be a Nat Geo Day because I just love Nat Geo Books, and I am so thrilled that I have on the program today Ella Schwartz. Ella has written a book. it's like my dream book. Hi, Ella.
Hi, good morning.
Whoa, I tell you something. As a homeschool mom, as a Cub Scout mom, as a Sunday school mom, whoa, we all thank you. This is beautiful.
Thank you. I'm so excited for this book.
Well, it's called Make This, Building, Thinking, and Tinkering Projects for the Amazing Maker in You. You have done an incredible job with this book.
Thanks, Patsy. No, this book was super fun to write with the folks at Nat Geo. They are an amazing organization to partner with, and it was a labor of love. The book took about 2 years to write and get out into the world, but it's here now for young readers to read, and I'm so excited.
Well, I'm so excited, too, because this, I really want to tell all of you listeners out there, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, get this book for every kid that you know, because it is so important that children do something other than with their thumbs on those phones. I mean, just to put your hands on all of these little projects that you've come out with. They are so delightful. I must say, I've done quite a few of them, either in Cub Scouts or as a homeschool mom, I was often in charge of the science projects because somehow they thought I was smart. So they'd always say, okay, Patsy, you get the science project for the week. So I know, of course, how did you become so crafty and so smart in this?
Oh, well, thank you for that. I do have a background in science and engineering, but I also write for children. So it was a really nice way to couple those two passions together. And then, you know, when we thought about how to structure this book, we thought about the science that we wanted to convey to the children and have them making and tinkering. So we chose experiments and crafts that really didn't require a lot of fancy equipment. So, you know, none of the projects in this book require you to go out and buy a 3D printer or fancy, you know, machinery or welding equipment. They are made with materials that you probably have in the house already, you know, rubber bands, craft sticks, glue, toilet paper rolls, and, you know, really get the kids moving, tinkering, making right away without a lot of prior, you know, knowledge, materials, and hopefully not even a lot of supervision. A lot of these projects can be done.
Just let them go. I mean, just let them.
Yeah.
Just have. I always had a box where I saved. I love. I think we ate Pringles only because those tops on the Pringles were so perfect for so many projects.
Yes.
And this is the kind of thing that, again, grandparents can do it. Collect your Pringle tops and interesting, you know, shaped things and put it all together. And when you go visiting your grandkids, carry this thing and say, have at it. You know, just have fun.
Yeah. That's exactly the idea that we talk about in the book is make a maker box. We call it a maker box, and throw in all of the, you know, little scraps that you might have around the house, you know, old chopsticks or, you know, paper towel rolls and, you know, little bottle caps. Throw them in the box and have the box on hand and ready to go. And when you're ready to make, You have it all. You have it on hand. You have it ready.
Exactly. I can't even begin to tell you which ones I love the most. One of the ones that brought back fond memories. Now, I did create two boys who were very, very inventive and who, of course, became, studied engineering. My youngest son is now at Madison and getting his PhD in biomedical engineering. And as homeschool, we were at home all the time. And so we had to do lots of fun things. And, as a matter of fact, at one point, because we always would build forts and turn the dining room into a choo-choo train and all of that type of thing. And at one point I thought to myself, well, I could make money if I, made plastic ones of this and sold it. And then I realized, I said, no, this is where they're learning. They're having fun. They're learning the limits of what they can take down and what they can use to build. They didn't take my fanciest furniture, but, they learned by the doing of it. And that's why this book is just a joy. Joy is a big part of my life. I named this program Joy because I love to see this joy that people get from reading and writing. And you got it in this book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do hope it brings some joy to readers. We've heard from readers that they've really liked it. They've really enjoyed it. I've seen some pictures of the crafts that have been made that readers have emailed to me, and it's just so fun to see kids really getting their hands into these projects.
Well, this is coming in time for National Inventors Day, which is was February 11th, and National Engineering Week, which is this week, and it is so really important. Why America is so innovative is because we have people who think like this book helps you think.
Yeah.
There are other countries that train engineers and they teach mathematics and they teach science, but it's the innovation. Now, I have 4 patents myself, so I know what it means to think sort of out of the box and come out with new ideas. And this book, I think, will really help kids.
Yeah, that's really the goal, right? And yes, the kids are making a project, which is super fun. And, so they might be, making an oven, a solar oven, so they can roast s'mores in their backyard. But they're actually taking those ideas that they learned in this really fun s'mores oven and extending it to bigger problems that are really facing our planet. And how do we might make an oven, a s'mores oven in our backyard, but how do you extend that to maybe fix a problem out in the desert where you might need to build an enclosure for growing plants? And the book really challenges the reader to think beyond what's in what you've just crafted and think bigger and more globally.
Or even all the way to Mars. You never know.
All the way to Mars.
Exactly.
Yes, all the way to Mars. So the idea is, yes, we're learning science, we're learning engineering, we're doing fun projects, but we're extending it. So these are the kids that are going to have to fix our problems.
Now, what I really want my listeners to understand is when your kids do projects like this, and I'm blessed with a wonderful husband who, when we would really literally turn the house into a long-lost continent, and we'd turn the dining room chairs into a choo-choo train and a table upside down into a boat.
I love it.
This is what we did. And I had a husband who, when he came home and saw this mess, would, instead of like, oh, what are you doing, would, get on the floor and start playing with us. And that's what's so important. And when a child does one of these projects, the parents, if they have that same sort of joy of just seeing the results, it can really change a child's life.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah, get down and dirty with the kids, right?
That's it.
Well, I love it.
Well,
yeah,
and we did. We did that. In Cub Scouts, we did the solar oven, and I want to say we did another one. We did. They're also. I love the use of food colorings and making things colorful. And when I we were in Sunday school one time, we did the walking water, you know, from mm-hmm. cup to cup, and we did it. What I did is with a plain white dish towel, and we did that. And then, yeah. of course, it was beautiful. And then the kids put their handprints in black on it as a Mother's Day gift.
Oh, nice!
Absolutely, a perfect gift and a perfect thing to remember. This whole idea of how the pictures you have in this book are beautiful about how to make this walking water. I think kids will just love this.
Oh, great. I'm so excited. Thank you. Thank you for those kind words.
Well, and of course, you must have had fun doing these. As much fun. I think actually, you know, a parent with the right sense of joy will have as much fun as a kid.
Absolutely. I did have a ton of fun. And some of the pictures in the book, these aren't actors. These are real kids who did all of the experiments and projects in the book. And you know, I worked alongside them while we were doing these projects, and you know, we refined them. Like, they gave me some advice to help make it easier or a little bit more interesting. And so, you know, working with the kids, you know, is what got these projects into this book in the way that they're in the book today.
And the photographs are beautiful, and all of the way, of course, this is National Geographic. Their books are always so beautifully done. The production values are great. The paper is wonderful. You know, and the layout of the photos and the way that you've written all these little stories or suggestions along with the photos are just placed beautifully.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. The problem with you Nat Geo people are I keep thinking, my gosh, you're getting paid for this. You're getting paid. You're having so much fun, and you're getting paid. It's wonderful.
I have to tell you, it was such an honor working with the Nat Geo team. They are an incredible organization. They're doing such great work. So working with the team of professionals at Nat Geo to make this book a reality was fun and an honor, really.
And, of course, I'm sure your children enjoyed you working on this.
My children were my guinea pigs. They got to go through all of the projects with me for the first go-round. So my house looked like a makerspace.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, I can tell you. That is a beautiful thing. And I, as a matter of fact, I was thinking about that, and my whole house looked like a makerspace for most of their youth. And I'm happy about it. You know, you can, nowadays, so many people, you know, the house is absolutely perfect, and their kids are sitting there at the computer or with their phone and just working their thumbs, and they're all going to have carpal tunnel syndrome.
They are,
but,
it's true.
But they're not having the fun that we had. You know, it's not important. You know, when you're old and gray, you can have a nice, neat house that, you know, nothing is messed up. But boy, when you're young, you should have this fun.
For sure. And maybe, just maybe, this book will get those kids off their screens for just a little bit and get them doing.
I think so. I think that because it is so beautifully done and the stories are just right, you know, just the right length, not too long, and you have all the list of what you need for each project, but because it's also so visual, the kids can just like jump in and do it, and parents can help and explain, you know, to the younger kids the theories behind it, you know, and it's something to talk about with kids. You can't talk about what are you looking at, you know, what are you playing that stupid game over and over.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have a conversation about that. You can't rush home and say, oh, what did you do on your stupid phone all day? Oh, here they have something to show you, and in many cases, something to save. That some of these projects they will save. It's amazing. You know, I look back now. You know, my son is getting his PhD, but I still have a lot of these little projects just hanging around on a shelf here or there, and you know, and it gives me such it puts a smile on my face when I go along and I see, you know, the little projects we made. Many of them are in this book. And, you know, the kaleidoscope one, I love that. I think that's so great. And this is something that's lasting. This is something that will be with you, you know. A few things I've put actually under glass or in one of those picture frames that has depth, you know, so that they'll have this, you know, 50 years from now and 60 years from now, and they'll smile again and they'll say, you know, this will bring back smiles. That's what I'm That's so right. afraid for the young people today who are just on their screens, that they won't have these hands-on. First of all, it's great tactile. You learn to use your fingers. You know, other than your two thumbs, still don't know how these kids can work with just their two thumbs. I sometimes have hard enough time just poking with, you know, my fingers to dial my phone. But other than that, you know, they're not really that tactile as we used to be, I think.
I mean, yeah, think about it. You know, even the skills of cutting, using a scissor, using, you know, folding paper. I mean, these are all, like, life skills for the little ones.
And
easy. It's not that intuitive.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I can't even, you know, I can turn to every page here and think of some wonderful thing to say about it. I love the ones about light, reflection, refraction. These are things that... really, kids, you know, we need for our engineers in the future to know and to understand.
Yeah, I mean, when we were kids, I mean, think about when we were kids, right? We made, like, telephones out of soup cans and string. And you know, we talk about that in this book as well. So you can make the same telephone out of soup cans and string and or, you know, paper cups and string. And just like we did when we were kids. I'm hoping that if you make that project, a parent will talk to their kid and, you know, explain sound waves and how sound waves travel and vibrations, and then maybe think about how those sound waves might travel in the ocean and maybe, you know, help a budding oceanographer fix the pollution problem in our ocean. You never know where science and creativity can lead these young, imaginative, creative, brilliant children. You never know.
Exactly. And that's one of the joys of this book, is that as you turn the pages and you say, whoa, if somebody had told me that when I was young, maybe I would have, you know, thought in a different way. So it's just wonderful. I want to go out and give this book to every kid, you know, in the country, because you know, a simple thing like the maze. Now, you can buy plastic mazes, and you can give a kid a plastic maze, and they'll play with it for a little while, you know, and then they get bored, and then they'll go to the electronic maze on their phone. What do they learn? They don't learn anything from it. But when you build your own maze, then you start to think, you start to understand, you know, the process, and then just doing it yourself. It's so much fun.
Yeah. Yep. Cause and effect, and you know how to assemble things, and patience, right? And learning patience. You might not get that maze right on the first try. So that's the hope. That's the hope from this book.
Well, I just. And I don't know who did all the illustrations, the cartoon illustrations, but there are some that are really great in here. And the photographs, of course, are wonderful. That's the thing of Nat Geo. They just do such beautiful photography.
Yeah, phenomenal.
It is.
Phenomenal, yep. Yep, we worked with some phenomenal people on this project.
And I love the cartoons, like the one that the girls at the campfire. And all of this, again, encouraging boys and girls. There's a nice mix of boys and girls. Anybody, any kid can do this. And as you said, it's the patience of learning to do things, follow through, and the pride that one can get. A child can be so proud of, I don't know if they still do it, like take it to school type of thing. But I mean, you know, that's it's important that children be complimented and that they really try to make something nice and that there are people around them who say, yeah, that's great. You know, you did a great job. And I know when I was teaching Sunday school, we did a lot of these projects, and I think we got some to a really, really artistic level that the kids were surprised themselves at, wow, I did that. I really made that, you know, and doing things with materials, with glass, with plastics. It's wow. I don't know if I can ask you your favorite project, but tell us a few of your favorites.
Well, I think my favorite project, that one is actually easy. It is the solar oven. It's the s'mores oven, because I just think it's kind of cool to recycle a pizza box and roast marshmallows in your backyard. So that one was, and actually that was the very, very first project that I came up with for this book when I spoke with the Nat Geo team. I said, you know, that's my first idea, is the solar oven, and we loved the concept behind it, and we built on it from there. So I love that one, and I love the rainforest in a bottle, just because most kids look at it and they say, you don't need to water this plant? Like, it's a system, it's a self-contained system, and if you set it up just right, it'll take care of itself forever. And that one, usually the children are just amazed that you don't have to actually water the plant. And my third favorite one is probably the Roman arch. And I say that
I
recently got to do that one in a science class with a bunch of children. And it worked so nicely. This particular grade, it was a fourth grade here in the New York area. And they were studying Italy. And, well, Italy, you know, we have the Roman arch. And so we were able to extend their unit on Italy to cover the science behind the ancient Romans. So we complemented their lesson plan so nicely by learning about Italian, you know, feats of engineering. So that one was just fun because it complemented curriculum. So I will say that, you know, especially, you know, we hear about Common Core and we hear about classrooms that are trying to integrate science into their social studies and into their English units. Well, this is a way to do it. This book can help.
Oh, I love that project. When I got to that one, and that's near the end of the book, it's on page 126. I got to it and I said, oh, this is so perfect. I wish I had done it when the kids were young, but now I'm going to do it now. What the heck? I can do it on my own.
Do it now.
I can do it on my own. And, you know, and just have fun with it. It's beautifully illustrated. I thought, what lovely photo of the, here we have the two girls putting it together. And really, it explains the Roman arch in such a beautiful way. And also, I like the truss bridge, too. That was great. You know, other than, really, I did not buy, actually, I saved a lot of money when I look back on it. My kids did not have, other than Lego. Now, of course, we must say that we spent a fortune on Lego, but we did not have a lot of plastic toys, because we did all of these types of projects. We made our own. And of course, the addition, if you're going to buy plastic, buy Lego, because it's just it's sort of the thing that you need to really develop that in you of wanting to build but first, I think just working on your book will be a thrill for everybody. So is there a way that people can follow you, send you pictures of what their projects are?
Yeah, and I would love that. I love hearing from readers. I love seeing all of the creative work that children are doing. I do have a website. That is www.ellasbooks.com. And right through the website, you can contact me, and I would love to see photos. I'd love to hear from readers. I'd love to hear what you think of the book. And you can learn more about this project on the website and some of the other work that I'm doing with Nat Geo and other science books that I'm writing.
Okay, and some of your other books in general. So let's, everybody, again, repeat the name of the website.
It's www.ellasbooks.com.
Okay. Well, Ella Schwartz, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you, an absolute joy to read your book, Make This, Building, Thinking, and Tinkering Projects for the Amazing Maker in You. You've done a great service for everybody. Thank you so much, Ella.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
I love this book. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, I have another Nat Geo book because I love these books. I have so much fun with them. Okay, we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am going to play a tape of an interview I did with a wonderful author, another Nat Geo author, and I am so happy with this book. You can't go wrong with Nat Geo. If you want a perfect gift for anybody, there's always a Nat Geo book that you can find. Now, for the kids, really, this book that I was just talking to Ella Schwartz about, Make This, Building, Thinking, and Tinkering Projects, it's a book that I can tell you, if once you give this to a kid, they'll have hours and hours and hours of fun. But the next book is a book for all of you who are interested in traveling across America or even into Canada. And this is called 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. And it is written by really one of Nat Geo's top writers and travelers, and he knows everything about traveling. And so I'm really happy to have this interview here with Joe Yogerst, and we'll go ahead.
And the new book is so beautiful. Oh, it's amazing. I mean, when we talk about joy on paper, you have one of the greatest jobs in the world. Do you ever pinch yourself and say, is this work? Am I actually getting paid for this?
Oh, when I'm out in the field, definitely. When I'm sitting at home writing, not necessarily.
Oh, it is. It's an amazing book. And as I said, people will just want to sit for hours and go through it, sort of ticking off the ones that you've seen, because it's all about the wonderful, wonderful parks around America. And I was so happy that you had, I'm from Northern Michigan, and of course you had three wonderful parks there. Did you travel to those ones?
Yes, I did. I've been to them, yes. So, Northern Michigan's one of the best places in the whole world for parks.
Oh, it is. And, of course, being a Youper, I've been to these parks, and I love them. And, you know, we are such, in a way, we're just one of those hidden areas of the country where most people don't ever get to. But when they do, sure. They say, wow. Like Isle Royale National Park, was that an amazing visit?
It is, I think it continues to get better because they continue to enhance the wildlife there with what was there traditionally. I think they just transplanted another wolf pack there just very recently, and they try to enhance the wolf population. So, it's an amazing place. The fact that you have to take a boat to get there, the fact that it's out in the middle of Lake Superior, it just makes it very special.
Yes, and we're so lucky Canada didn't grab it because it is actually closer to Canada. But we got it. So it belongs to Michigan. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that island, how did you what was it like just being around there?
What, Isle Royale?
Yeah. A little rougher than the other island that you visited.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You pretty much have to go in summer. I stayed in the lodge rather than camping, but I took long walks through the forest. I think just a chance to see old growth forest like that is very special, although there is a lot in northern Michigan and northern Minnesota and parts of Wisconsin. And unfortunately didn't see any wolves, but I saw other wildlife. And it's a place like some of the other parks in this book where you can just get away and you can actually sit someplace in North America by yourself on a lake shore or on top of a hillside and be alone with nature. And I find that a very special experience that I've tried to replicate all over the world and all over the United States. And Isle Royale is definitely one of those places you can do it. There's a lot of other places too you can do that. Even the most crowded national parks like Yellowstone or Yosemite or Grand Canyon, there are lots of places where you can get away from the crowds and be by yourself with nature.
Well, you know, it's so wonderful when you think about the real diversity of parks that we have in the United States. It's amazing, and it can keep you busy for hours. I just wanted to ask you, the other island there in Upper Peninsula is Mackinac Island. And I was wondering if you were there either for the Lilac Festival or the Fudge Festival.
No, I know of them, but I haven't been to either one.
Oh, you have to plan that one, the Lilac Festival, because that is quite amazing. That's in June, and it's unbelievable.
Now, it's an amazing little park. It's one of the smaller parks in the book, but I think one of the more interesting. First of all, because of its history, the fact that three different countries fought over it in three different wars, and ultimately the Americans won in the War of 1812, which is why the whole Upper Peninsula is part of the United States rather than Canada, but also because it has this other dimension of having a lot of nature, both on land and in the strait. There's hiking, horseback riding, kayaking, and a lot of things that you can do on what is essentially a fairly small island. I also love the fact that motor vehicles are not allowed. So all those roads you have to yourself, other than with the horse carriages and the occasional person who rides by on a horse, other than bicycles, you don't have to worry about traffic. And it's very special in that regard. And so much history concentrated in a small place.
And it is a beautiful destination, one of the best. I don't know, every place in this book, and I keep turning back and forth to different ones. I love the one, the American Tropics chapter.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Some of these I didn't know about.
That was something different we decided to do also, was take parks that are literally tropical or subtropical and group them together rather than as a region, more like a theme. Most of the book is by region, but this one we thought, there's parks in Hawaii, there's parks in South Florida, and there's parks in the Caribbean, the U.S. possessions there, the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. And we can do a tropical theme because that's what they have in common rather than a common region. And it was very exciting doing those, especially the parks in Puerto Rico, which I got to see before the hurricanes came through.
Wow.
Actually, I saw them before and after the hurricanes because I went to I was there a month before the two hurricanes hit, Maria and Irma, and then I was there a couple months after they hit. So I got to see those parks before and after.
Wow. It was a devastating thing for them, wasn't it?
Yes, but it's amazing how quickly nature bounces back. And that's what I saw in the National Forest there. I knew what it was like before because I had been there. And I was there about 3 months after the hurricane. And it was incredible how the trees were sprouting young leaves, how the wildlife was still there, although I don't know where they took shelter during the cane. And some of the trails were already open thanks to a lot of volunteers. Puerto Ricans love their parks like everyone else. And as soon as that hurricane passed, they had hundreds of people to volunteer to clean up the destruction in the National Forest.
Well, I also liked in this section that you had the Virgin Island National Park and Samoa, American Samoa.
Yes, that's right. Probably the least visited of all the parks in the book because you have to go to the South Pacific to do it, and it's not even a popular destination in the South Pacific. And when you get there, you have to get on a boat or a seaplane and fly out to another island to visit that, you know, what I consider the best part. You can drive to part of the national park on the main island, but to see the best part of American Samoa National Park, you have to go out to a place that looks like it's from a movie. It just looks from South Pacific, or it just looks unreal. The color of the ocean, the volcanic mountains coming up with jungle on the hillsides, the white sand beach and the palm trees, and it's just ideal. It's perfect. It's like a vision of tropical paradise, that park. But very, very few visitors.
Well, you know, we can't ever ask somebody like you what's your favorite, but tell us a few of your absolute favorites or somewhere you had some adventures.
Well, the ones
did you
that
ever
I
get
had
lost?
The most adventures. Sorry, what was that?
Did you ever get lost anywhere on these trails?
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty good at directions, but I'm sure at one point or another I got lost, but I don't recall anything. The place where I've had the bear encounters is Yosemite, but probably because I have been there the most. I don't mess around with grizzly bears, but black bears I'm a little less leery of, and I've had black bear encounters in Yosemite. With a couple of friends, I wanted to backpack and camp the John Muir Trail. The first night we were out, we did exactly what we were supposed to do, which is put all of your food and other things like that in one of your backpacks and hoist it up into a tree, out onto a limb. We did that, went to bed in our tent. Not long afterwards, heard something crawling up the tree, which was a bear. And we thought, it's not going to get our food because it has to go out on that limb. And the limb is going to break if it tries to get our food. Well, the bear went out on the limb. The kamikaze bear went out on the limb. It broke. He fell onto the ground with our backpack. We shined our flashlight out the camp, tent window. The bear growled at us, and that's the last that we were going to go outside and try to prevent it from stealing our food. Next morning, we had no food left, and we had to give up the hike.
Yeah, well, it was a good idea not to go after him, I think.
No, but the most adventures I've had are in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park in Alaska, which is the largest national park and also one of the least visited. It's huge. And I've had a lot of adventures there, backpacking in the wilderness, fly-in backpacking where a bush plane takes you in, drops you in the middle of nowhere, and you're on your own in the Alaska wilderness to survive. Also, bush pilot flights up in the mountains there, landing on glaciers in a small plane, landing on these tiny little grass shelves 3,000 feet up a mountain, kayaking Icy Bay, which is kind of like Yosemite Valley, but it's filled with water, with glaciers and waterfalls on the side. So a lot of my big adventures have been in Alaska parks.
Wow. As I said, this book is so beautiful. And it's so wonderful to think that somebody gets paid to do this. It's just wonderful. I get such a kick out of it. Like, I just every time I go through a page, I say, "My goodness, somebody paid him to go there. Somebody paid him to." Yes. Did you ever dream when you were a child that you would have such a perfectly wonderful job?
Well, it was kind of the plan.
It was a plan.
I grew up, I had an uncle who subscribed to National Geographic magazine, and I would go over to his house on weekends, and my cousins would be playing in the backyard, and I'd be in the living room just glued to these magazines. And that coincided with me basically becoming a writer in high school, and I eventually got degrees in both geography and journalism. So they kind of combined together into what I've done.
You are one smart guy, I tell you. I was reading those National Geographic. We also had the thing, and I had all this shelf full of these yellow, beautiful National Geographics. But actually, it did lead me, reading those, to be a world traveler also. I traveled a lot, but I never thought of getting paid for it. It was so stupid how I look back. I could have, I'm not sure I could have been as good as you, because you are brilliant. I mean, really, the writing, the pictures that you, and all the places you find, absolutely.
Well, they say find something you love and get someone to pay you for doing it.
And they certainly, and they're lucky that they have you, because you put a special touch. Everything that you do is really great. All of your books are great. But this one, I just want to recommend to my listeners that if they're looking for a gift for somebody, well, first of all, you have to get one for yourself, because you're not going to give it to anybody. And then you, because you just keep going through this book. And also, it's just a wonderful thing. People can, really start planning their lives. It's ticking off all the national parks that they visit. And just have fun with this book. And so, do you have like a Facebook place people follow you? Instagram? Where do people follow you?
I have all of those. I have a website, www.joeyogers.com, where you can learn about all three of the books that I have out at the present time, which is 100 Parks, which launches today, 50 States, which was its predecessor, and a brand new novel called Nemesis, which is a murder mystery set in 1880s Southern California when it was part of the Wild West.
No.
So you can learn about all three of my current books on my website, or my author's page on Amazon.com and Goodreads. And that's where you can learn more about both 100 Parks and my other books.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today to talk about this book, because today is the release date. But I want to invite you back to talk about Nemesis. I have a particular interest in that word, by the way. So I will get the book, I will buy the book, I will read it, and I will send you a date, and you will be back on Joy on Paper, okay?
Definitely. You'll learn things about Southern California you never knew before.
Oh, that's exciting. I always love to learn new things. And everybody, get this book, 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas. And I just want to say that When you read this book, you'll keep saying, oh, he gets paid. And we're happy that you get paid and have lots of wonderful adventures. And I'm sure you'll have another great travel book out soon. And then you'll be back. But you'll be back before that to talk about Nemesis, okay?
All right, great. Thanks. Okay. I look forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye, Joe. Right. Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, and since I taped that, I did order his book, and I got it, and I'm just halfway through. It is a fun book. I've already contacted him, and he's going to be on in March to talk about Nemesis. And he's just a delight, an absolute delight, as I think all Nat Geo people are. They are just fantastic. And I want to thank National Geographic so very much for sending me so many wonderful books. As everybody knows, I recommend them on every holiday, anytime you have to give a gift, a birthday or a holiday, just turn to Nat Geo. You can't go wrong. There will be a book there for you to buy, and probably then there'll be a book that you'll want to buy for yourself, because they are just so very, very good. Now, a few weeks ago, I had on the program a wonderful author. It was her first book, and her name is Wendy Levine, and she wrote a book called Butterflies Are Free, Why Not Me? And it is a story about her 47-year struggle with anorexia nervosa. She is going to be speaking next week on February 27th at 7 p.m. at Congregation B'nai Israel. And she's going to be talking about a book and about some of the things that she's learned over the years of her really 47 years of struggling with this disease. And she's a wonderful person. And if you have, you know, whether you are having a problem yourself or if you know somebody who is having a problem, please check out Congregation B'nai Israel's website. And they have the details there. But it is at 7 p.m. On February 27th. And it would be a wonderful opportunity for you to meet the author and then to listen to her suggestions and to help. The book is very well done. It's, you know, so often people will write a great book about a subject, but you don't know where to go after you read the book. But in her case, she has one whole section there with advice on where you can get help. All of the complicated, I did not realize how very complicated it was in terms of insurance and employers' rights and all of this type of thing. So if you're interested, please find her book. It's online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's called, again, Butterflies Are Free, Why Not Me? And it's by Wendy Levine. So it might be a great help to you, or it might be a great help to somebody that you love and you want to help, and so that they will avoid this long, long 47 years that she suffered. And she's so beautiful and so lovely, and I hope that she has great success with this book. Now, I am back to the subject of, again, I don't want any of you to miss out on doing the Writer's Digest competition for a book that has already been published, that you've published yourself, and the competition is coming up. The deadline is April 1st, and you still, you know, you should just get to the website and submit the book. It's a wonderful opportunity. As I, one of my callers last week mentioned, he submitted something a few years ago, and the value wasn't, you know, he didn't win, but the value was that he also got a very, very comprehensive report back from the reader. And I want to tell you that I've spoken to the editor at Writer's Digest, one of the editors, she was there for 14 years, and she said that all of the readers, they are very, very careful with the readers they select. And all of the readers are either literary agents, editors at major publishing houses, or people who have been in the industry and really know good writing when they see it, because they don't want just anybody. You know, some of the competitions that are out there, and there are many competitions. Some are good, but some are bad. And I will tell you that occasionally I've met writers who have like entered 20 or 30 competitions, and they're not free. It depends, 25, 35. Actually, the ones that I've discovered that are scams are the ones that charge like more, like $100. But you have to know where you are submitting your work. First of all, you don't want to submit your work to anybody that you can't follow up on, that doesn't have a long, long record of accomplishments, because there are many fly-by-night. I've spoken to a few writers recently who have sent their material to companies in Hollywood who send emails out, just the like email blasts, send us your work and we will, for sure, because I'm sure you're a brilliant writer, we will write a script for you for a small sum, and we will then get your script and your book in front of somebody in Hollywood and we will get you a movie deal. And, you know, a few of the people who have now come to my program and have talked to me about it have paid as much as $3,500 to this type of nonsense. And unfortunately, once you pay it, it's very difficult to get it back. Of course, if you do find yourself in a situation like that, I would say, because if, you know, it is fraud. And but then, of course, you have to turn to a lawyer. And if you are in a situation like that, please contact Bill Larson at Larson & Larson. He is our legal eagle here. He's going to be back on March 15th, and we're going to be talking about the problems of sending your material out there. Because once it's out there, it's out there. And you know, this in this world, people will steal anything. And people in Hollywood, I hate to tell you this, kiddos, but people in Hollywood really do steal things from their grandmothers. So you want to be really, really careful of where you are sending your material. But you don't have to worry about Writer's Digest. Just go to writersdigest.com, click on the competition. The explanation of what you have to submit is right there. And it's for books that have been done, also poems, plays, a lot of things. And the grand prize is $8,000 and a trip to New York, which is always a wonderful, wonderful thing. Because it's funny, many writers today don't even get that trip to New York that they used to get in the olden days. Everything is done over the internet. So one of the ways to get to New York is to win a competition. And they bring you out there and they really then do wine and dine you. Because I've talked to a few authors lately who they now realize that they never got that. They never got that. They've done everything over the internet or a few telephone calls. And they're happy they got a check, but they actually never got that olden day VIP treatment of going to New York City, arriving there, and somebody's waiting for you, takes you in a limo. So you want to try maybe to enter this competition. And you never know. You might win. And that would be lots of fun. Again, a reminder again that Wendy Levine is going to be speaking on next Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m. at Congregation B'nai Israel. And why don't you go and listen to her? Also, you know, her book is an example of a book that if you know, if you have a subject, if you have a problem, something that you think would help people, write a book. Write a book, because I think her book is going to be very helpful. She is not going to be, I know she will be invited to speak at many, many events. And along the way, as she builds up her reputation, she will get paid for these events and free travel and that type of thing. So if you are an authority or if you know about a particular subject, write a book. And you can land up being a guest on a radio show, a television show, or on the speaking circuit, because speakers can make a lot of money. So think about it. What else? Oh, I just want to say, I again, thank you everybody who sent me Valentine's cards. My webpage is radio-joyonpaper.com, and my email is patsy.radio@gmail. And that's, you know, it's just wonderful to hear from you, and I really appreciate it. Okay, remember, one of the joys of life is to hear your words spoken in an audible book, or to see them on paper, or if you're really lucky, to hear the words lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a film, or nowadays a streaming video, much to Hollywood's chagrin, because they're having problems. But anyway, you never know. All you have to do is try and just start writing and say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And to everyone, if you're looking for a gift, buy Nat Geo Books. Bye-bye now.